Hi there. Welcome to episode number 19 of Fashionpreneur Talk with Gitana Styling. My name is Sandra Mateo Iori. I'm a fashion stylist and business consultant. This podcast is about having genuine conversations about fashion entrepreneurship and getting your questions answered. Remember, you can always send us your questions to info@gitanastyling.com. That is info@gitanastyling.com. You can remain anonymous if you want, or you can share your name, your business, and your website, and we'll be happy to share it with our listeners. We also want to invite you to hang out inside our free private Facebook group, the Fashion Entrepreneur Club Hangout. In there, we provide you with inspiration, support, and knowledge to build a successful fashion business. So today is episode number 19, and I have a very special guest with me. This is such a treat, and I know you're going to love this conversation. I'm talking about fashion resale industry entrepreneur Lauren Vaughn. Lauren is the founder and CEO of The Upside, the largest online luxury resale boutique in Canada. And we're so excited to have her here with us. So if you're a reseller or you want to be, this will be super helpful to you. And if you are a fashion entrepreneur who just wants to know more about this incredible woman and how she built her business, you're going to enjoyed this as well. So welcome, Lauren.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Oh, this is so great to have you here. Lauren, tell us a little bit more about your background. Where you come from, where you went to school.
Yeah, so I'm from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. So not the largest city in North America. But two things I was always really passionate about growing up was being an entrepreneur, and then I got into fashion as I grew up. And my entry into fashion was when I was in university. So I took my Bachelor of Commerce degree and I majored in marketing. And while I was in university, I interned for a fashion designer. At the time, he was Canada's largest designer. His name was Paul Hardy, and he made beautiful knits and really avant-garde, almost Rick Owens pieces. And through that, I did not get paid. It was an internship, but I did get to travel to all of these fashion shows. So I got to go to Toronto, New York, London, Paris. And it was through this that I was really, that was my first experience in the fashion industry. And so that was how I kind of started in that industry. And then after I graduated university, since I fell in love with Paris when I went there, I definitely, who wouldn't? I had rose-colored glasses on, and I bought a one-way ticket. Wow. So, yeah, you know, the things you do when you're in your early 20s, looking back, not sure. But through that, I had a finite budget. I had just graduated university. I served in a restaurant throughout my whole schooling, so I saved everything I had. And I moved to Paris. So I really learned quickly how to look chic on a budget.
Very, very useful.
yes, exactly. And it was through that that I got to, see all these great kind of whether resale or vintage stores in Paris. And I just found that how they looked at resale was just very different than North America. You know, there was no negative connotation, that we had seen and have,
yes.
I think
yes.
It's fine. But yeah, but there wasn't that kind of frowned upon or looked down upon. Around it. These were beautiful pieces and people cherished them, and almost more so if they had a story to them, right? And
yes.
they were pre-loved. So I eventually had to leave Paris because I ran out of money and my French was never good enough to stay.
Okay.
So I came back to Canada and I just noticed a major gap in the marketplace here.
Okay, incredible. You talk about the sustainable circular economy and people use that term, but what does it mean to you? And for people who don't know, what this term means?
So what it means to me is whenever I'm purchasing anything, I really like to think about the life of that item, right? And when we're buying things, whether for an example, fast fashion, so you're making a quick decision, you're not really thinking about it. Those are items that they don't have much of a life beyond after you wear them for 6 months or a year and they end up kind of in the garbage can, right? So
yeah.
For me, a circular economy is just really thinking about the extended life cycle of these items and what their secondary home is going to be and what that looks like.
incredible. Yeah, I mean, you say 6 to 1 year, but for some people, it's even less. It's incredible,
know,
right?
Right? Or not at all, right? It's the things you buy on a whim and sit there and then you actually never wear.
I know, it's crazy. Okay, so something that was really interesting reading your bio and reading articles about you and what you do is that you always point out technology. You say that, you know, one must create and incorporate and invest in the right technology in order for a resale business to thrive. Can you please expand on that?
Yeah, I'd love to. And from, you know, and because your listeners are entrepreneurs, I would probably answer this a bit different than I would in a different style of podcast, just focused on fashion. But, sure. You know, technology is very expensive and it is also kind of your competitive moat. You know, there's lots of things when you're starting a company that you're asking yourself, you know, what makes us different? Yeah. And for us, it was understanding early on that we wanted to be a technology enabled marketplace. So we very well could have, you know, just opened up a consignment store and curated it with great items, and that, you know, that's a,
totally.
It's a great business, and mm-hmm. and a lot of people do that. And for us, we saw a bigger picture. So we said, we feel like this is a sustainable way forward for retail and fashion. You know, we know fashion and textiles is the second largest global polluter. So how do we think bigger about this? How do we, you know, look at consumer mindsets and shifts? And since we started, I mean, it has changed, but this was us taking a chance and predicting that it's going to, right? Mm-hmm. So really taking the technology enabled, and what that means for us is especially on the consigner flow. So we've built IP where you can create a draft product from anywhere in Canada, and we can pretty much track that product all the way through our system to wow. be on the site and sold, and then of course owing you a commission and then paying that out for the option to reshop. So this is something that, you know, it did cost money and we didn't have it right away, you know, and I think you're starting a company, you can have the big picture, but it's just baby steps, right? And every step along the way, and still, right, you're iterating and you're thinking about
definitely
how can we do this different and think bigger. And so I wouldn't want like the capital investment to necessarily be something that would inhibit people from starting their company, but it's just how do you take the first step. And for us, we knew we wanted to be a technology company, but mm-hmm. our first website cost me $12,000. I called around to everyone and I said, what's the cheapest you can make a website? This mm-hmm. is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I went with the second cheapest guy. Felt like that was a good strategy.
Yeah.
So, you know, you test and iterate. And that was something like with technology, especially that we did and continue to do.
Yes. Well, thanks for sharing that. I love how you said that, you know, obviously, I mean, I ask that questions because you are who you are and I want people to know, you know, what's behind it. But at the same time, you said that it's little steps, you know, one after the other one. And I want to dive into that too, because a lot of the people who listen to us, you know, they have perhaps a brick and mortar consignment store, right? Or they have an eBay store and maybe they have it on the side and they really want to make that, you know, make it a full-time thing, right? And perhaps leave their 9-to-5 job. And how do you take it there? I mean, what do you consider based on your experience? What are the top pillars for, you know, a business to be a resale business to be successful? What do people need in order to create something like that?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And you know, when we started, it was in my basement too. So I fully understand that. And I had another full-time job.
Okay.
So I've been there, and you know, what I feel the pillars of this, especially in the resale industry, is going to be consumer confidence, mm-hmm. Breadth of product, and technology behind it. So, meaning, you know, when you're looking at the customer journey on both the seller and the buyer side, the dual-sided marketplace. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're just selling your stuff from your closet, or maybe yours and your girlfriend's, you probably have a great small business, you know, where you have some fun stuff up there, right? Like you all have great taste. But where I think the problem is that if you're gonna get someone to your site, or maybe it's Instagram, if you don't have enough product, they're likely not gonna come back because they wouldn't feel that maybe there's something for them.
Okay.
For us, what we did in the beginning is we actually started crowdsourcing product about 6 months to a year before we actually even launched the site. Okay. So we talked to friends of friends, and asked for their product. But then beyond that, we launched incentive programs. So we had a little bit of capital where we, you know, gave gift cards away to stores that people love to consign with us.
Awesome.
Yeah.
awesome. And just out of curiosity, because I hear my people saying, Sandra, ask her, how many items could you get started with? What would you recommend? I know there's not an exact number, but a range, you know, can you tell us a range of...
I know, I'm trying to think of what we started, like in the hundreds.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, a few hundred.
Awesome. What about pricing? I mean, what are your top tips when it comes to pricing? I know this is a big one for people. What do you have to say about that?
So I would say the biggest shock, I think, to people is, in not in a good way, is when like clothing doesn't really retain its value. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's the one that's going to take the biggest hit. You know, you look at designer denim and it's so expensive to buy and it's just not going to hold its value. So, for clothing, like check resale, shop final markdowns, because it's just not going to be there. You know, handbags always are going to be the top for retaining the value, and then shoes and accessories can too. So, I think when you're investing in pieces, just make sure that it will hold that value. So if, you know, a year down the road, you find you're not using it or it just wasn't the right fit or the right size for your lifestyle, that you can then sell it and get, you know, a large portion of that value back.
Yeah. And now that you mentioned those items, which top items do you think are the ones that retain that value? You mentioned shoes. I know purses as well. Some people really find value with coats, for example. What other items?
I think any classic pieces, like you mentioned, like a great Burberry trench or a great pair of, you know, Christian Louboutins or Jimmy Choo's, handbags as well. You know, when you think of the big designers, you know, such as Louis Vuitton and Chanel, you know, these are brands that have stood the test of time. It's like a blue, you know, like a blue chip stock. Like it's not gonna, you know, I can always, here's kind of a funny story is, you know, I was serving and working university and I loved designer stuff. And I thought I was going to purchase my first handbag. And at this time, a Chanel Classic Medium was about about $2,200.
Yeah.
And at the time, the Marc Jacobs Stan bag was like the it bag, right? Everyone had it draped over their arm and the big quilted chain. And I hummed and hawed. And this was such a big purchase and I had been saving. And I purchased the Marc Jacobs Stan bag. So this is my one regret in life, because as we know, that same Chanel bag now is, I mean, you would buy it for, I believe, about 6,500 US and the resale is about the same.
Yeah.
And the Marc Jacobs Stan bag, I think you could maybe sell for $400 new. So that's my biggest purchase regret in life, and probably regret in general.
Wow. Would you say, because I see this, either people sell really, you know, designer items, or people focus on maybe trendy things, but really there's a lot of pieces in between that really don't, you know, you mentioned the jeans, for example, that they don't hold their value. Do you think that's where it should be, or how it works out? We're not talking about how it should, but maybe what it works in business, that maybe with the pricier items, classic pieces that hold their value, and maybe either that or the trendy pieces that just, you know, people buy them quickly and perhaps they don't make as much money, but at least they keep the business going. What do you think about that?
You know, I would say that there's a whole portion in the middle that, and I don't like to use the term luxury even when we talk about our business, I just say designer. Sure. Because, you know, a lot of these pieces are really entry-level price points, and like, you know, you can get a DVF dress, a great wrap dress for, you know, $148 Canadian, you know, or $128. So these are really, you know, I think when we're talking about the contemporary high-end brands, there's so much value in shopping resale. So when we talk about Alice and Olivia, Rag & Bone, Vince, Theory, DVF, all of these brands that are really everyday brands, you're just going to see such a big value proposition from buying resale, because you're paying a quarter of the price you would if they were retail, you know? So
definitely.
So that's where I think you were asking is that kind of big gap in the middle.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you really see a lot of value from looking at resale.
Yes. Okay. Awesome. So how about returns? That's that area that scares people and, prevents them from scaling, because they're like, I don't, you know, they're just scared of it. They struggle with this area. What's your advice with returns? Which, by the way, I read your website and you guys are doing a tremendous job with everything.
Well, thank you.
It's just
thank
so
you.
Good.
Oh, good. I appreciate that. And we've always taken returns. And since the pandemic started, we actually offer free returns, and I think we're going to continue to do that, because for the reasons you said, that more and more things are moving online, and I think that just has to be a cost of doing business. where you can offer a free return. Now, I will say, because the way our technology stack works, the commission is automatically calculated to the seller at the time of purchase. So, uh-huh. so we offer returns for site credit, which for the most part, I believe consumers are okay with because these are owned items by somebody else. But if you it didn't fit or it just wasn't for you, no questions asked, well, we will return it for site credit for you to get something in the future.
Yes. Love it. You know, one thing that I love about all this entrepreneurship world and people just, you know, going back to smaller businesses is that this customer service factor that it's included in there that, you know, sadly we don't see anymore in a lot of the big corporations. And I think that's a huge plus for entrepreneurs out there. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think customer service, and I come from a customer service background, you know, some of our staff and our managers also do, that just makes such a difference. I think when you've got that as a pillar of what you want to run your company by, I always say to anyone on our operations team, you know, I empower them to make a decision, but to put yourself in the customer's shoes and make sure that you would be happy with the decision that you're, or the proposition that you're suggesting for a solution. So we're really focused, you know, we wouldn't be here without our sellers and our buyers. So we're really customer focused and want to make sure that, you know, everyone's happy with every purchase.
Awesome. I think there's such value, like when you're purchasing an item, you know, especially when it's something intimate, you know, like clothing, right? That when they serve you well, when you have a good relationship, they treat you well, you always come back. Like there's no, you know, you would always come back, and then you go to a big store and maybe they don't have that for you. And it's such a disappointment.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think the biggest, and I always say the biggest opportunities are from when you do have a bit of a mishap or a misunderstanding, or
yes.
you know, those are your biggest opportunities. And to see it as that, instead of, you know, becoming defensive, and learning opportunities, right? How could we have prevented this? How can we do it better next time? Like, you're never going to get it 100% right. You know, so for example, I will never forget our first, so still in my basement. So we're talking like 2015, our first purchase, you know, I didn't know the person, you know, it wasn't like my mom purchasing something. And I was so excited to get it out, and I packed it, and it was a handbag, and I packed it up and I shipped it like as quick as possible, just because I couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And you know, 4 days later or whatever the time being, the customer reaches out and she says, I would actually like to return this bag because I found hair in it.
Oh my God.
I know. And you know, I thought, I didn't even think to look inside the bag because I was just so excited to ship the bag. So, you know, all along the way, you're going to have customer service, you know, and you just want people to be happy and take it as a learning experience. And I think if companies do that, people are more likely actually to recommend you based on a bad experience than if they just have like a standard good experience. So
yeah, I agree. Okay, cool. Like I said before, I do love your website, and I was very intrigued by this idea that you guys have, that you call it the hang up. Can you please explain to our listeners what the hang up is, what it's all about, and how do you use it in your business?
Yeah, so the hang up was something that was created during quarantine. You know, we were just, we took the time to really step back and try to create community and content beyond just selling. And for us, it was, the first one was me, and like, I'm in my sweatpants. And so it was very candid, and it was something that we started, and there was so much positive feedback that we've actually continued it. And we thought, you know, we'll do this once a month, and we're actually doing it weekly. So every Thursday, a hang up episode comes. And what it is it's a woman filming herself in her closet and kind of talking about, you know, their favorite pieces, their biggest fashion blunders, you know, their best consignment find. So it's just kind of, you know, for us, it was that way to create community amongst women, because we do believe that this industry is so much more than just buying a used dress. You know, it is really, you know, supporting each other, empowering people to understand the value of the latent assets sitting in their closets, and just a community of women, right? So that was something for us that tied that all together. And it's been so fun. I don't actually watch them before they come out, so I watch them with everyone else on Thursday. And it's like, I look forward to them every week. This week's going to be really good.
That's amazing. That's great. I ask you this because, you know, I always tell people, you know, it's not only telling people bye, it's just you have to develop a relationship. And the only way to develop it is in a human level. You know, you don't have to make it super complicated. Just create it one piece of content that you can have those conversations and tell people what you're all about and what the business is about, but in a way that it's fun and it's natural and you're actually helping your customer. I think it's brilliant. So I wanted to ask you, you know, in what creative way, how can people, resellers, market their business in a more creative way, which I think your guys are doing greatly with this piece, the Hang Up.
Yeah, and I think just understanding that there's a community behind it, and how do you engage that community, and that's something we're still trying to explore, right? I think there's so many opportunities around that, because you have an engaged group of women who are both buyers and sellers, and sometimes both. So I agree with you. I think, and now more so than ever, people are just going to be looking to the companies to say, you know, what are you doing? Like, what is your value proposition? Because the just buy doesn't work anymore, I don't believe, you know, and we've seen like the decline of fast fashion.
Yes.
You know, all of these companies are either entering bankruptcy or going to probably soon. Yeah. And it's really the value prop, right? And it has to be more for the buy. So I fully agree with you. And whatever that looks like when you're looking at your business, for how you have a community around you, and lean into that community. And there's so many businesses that have done really well with that.
Yeah, I agree.
Like Glossier, right? Like you have this community of empowered women who are like standing on a soapbox yelling how much they love your company.
Yeah.
I think that's such a good example of community engagement.
It's incredible. It makes you stand out in such a beautiful way, and you're helping them at the same time. So definitely. For those interested in being a seller, or perhaps a buyer, or both maybe, what do they need to do? I know that to be a seller, you have to be in Canada, correct?
Correct, yep.
So but
to be a seller, you have to be in Canada. but for the buyers, yeah, you can. So it's shoptheupside.com, and if you're located outside of Canada, the good news is all items are in Canadian dollars, so there's a huge buy advantage if you are in USD. So everything is on the site, and then our sellers are from Canada.
Okay, great. So they just go to your website, and you guys, I know you guys there have a form, you fill it out, and that's about
it. Yeah, and then a waybill will be sent to you. You can affix it to your package and take it to any Canada Post.
Awesome. Where can people connect with you, Lauren? And the upside, where do people visit you?
So you can visit us on Instagram, so at ShopTheUpside, if you wanted to watch an episode of The Hang Up, or check out what we're doing on there. And then as well, the website is shoptheupside.com, and then an email address would be info@shoptheupside.com.
Awesome. Amazing. Well, I know you're a busy lady, but I want to thank you so much for being here with us today and answering these questions. If anybody else has any more questions, I would let you know.
Wonderful. And I'd be happy to answer them.
Thanks. But thank you so much for being here with us today. It's been our pleasure. This is what we have for you guys today. Thank you, Lauren, for joining us. This has been so much fun. If you like this podcast, guys, please let us know. Send us an email, a message, share it with someone who might like it, who is in this business. Also, if you have a moment, please subscribe to our podcast to show your support. Thank you so much for listening and hanging out with us today. I hope that you have a fantastic rest of your week. Thank you.